Blog Talk Radio.
There is no earthly way of knowing.
Good man is out of time.
Which direction we are going?
Direct me El Camino. It would have been DWI.
Reached a tipping point.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Rachel, joined with my co-host Larry Goodman for another edition of Tipping Point. And it looks like tonight will be another very romantic duo for Larry and I while Steve is in Hawaii for his class reunion, who may or may not be joining us later, but we'll find out. Larry, how are you doing tonight?
I've had better days. Just found out our air conditioning system is shot.
Oh, no.
So,
it's perfect timing at the beginning of the summer here.
Yeah, well, I mean, that and $4,000 later is what it's going to wind up being. So that's a little bit of a bite that I was not quite prepared to, hear that news today.
I don't think anyone's ever prepared to hear that news, but hopefully it doesn't stop us from seeing your lovely face at all of the shows around Georgia and the rest of the Southeast.
Well, I will. It's not going to interfere with my schedule. No, just my pocketbook. So, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. It was a great weekend because I actually got out, as you know, and did a little bit more starting at PCW, and then actually going to watch the second half of Shindig 2 with you.
Yes, that was fun. We actually got to take in a show together, at least half a show, in any case.
Yeah, it's great to go and not have any responsibility, because I help with the booking on PCW, so it's kind of double duty there. And at Anarchy, I'm out about 700 times per show. So it was nice to just sit and dodge wrestlers while we watch the show together. I think there were two or three times last night that we got up to avoid getting smacked in the face.
Yeah, well, that stage shenanigans in the that debacle of a tables match. Yeah, that was pretty wild, and in on a number of levels, that was pretty wild. That had to be the most stubborn table I think I may have ever seen. I think of one other time that was pretty bad, but the other table I'm thinking of was one of those really, really thick tables, and I could understand why it couldn't break. That table was not anything special, and it sure seemed like it would have broken without all that difficulty, but it didn't. The only thing that almost broke was Roscoe Ray.
Oh yeah. For those who weren't at Shindig, there was a tag team loser leaves town tables match, and the culmination of it, after two tables had already been broken, was Trinity trying to put Roscoe Ray through the table. And what did you count, six times?
Six different
they were
attempts.
Unsuccessful?
Yeah, yeah.
At least the leg did come off of one side of the table, so it's kind of broken. They can't use that table anymore. So
No.
You know, I chalked that up to kind of broken at least.
Yeah, and I'm glad they let it go at that. At that point, after he went flying over the rope and you know, looked like he damn near broke his neck landing on that thing. Yeah, I know he was okay, thank God. But I'm glad they let it go at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But since we're talking about Shindig, what was your and I know you only saw the second half, but what was your impression of what you did see?
I'm going to kind of tie this into the rest of my night, but we had a very good crowd at PCW, and I was glad to see a big crowd at Shindig. I know last year's was a bit bigger, but for the time of year, for such a nice day, it was good to see so many people there. it was a long night. I was told as soon as I got there that there was a pre-show, which was, let's see, it was 12 matches all together. And I want to say the main show was like somewhere around 9 matches. So it was 3 matches for the pre-show. Which was a little confusing. You were there for it. Was there a tie-in for the pre-show? Or
no.
Was it separate? Or?
I don't know the reasons behind this, but the order of segments was changed. So my understanding is that the original plan was that they were going to do 2 or 3, I believe 3, pre-show matches, then go to the Hall of Fame inductions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if people were coming in late and so forth during the pre-show, fine and dandy. Instead, for reasons that I don't know, we'd have somebody from SFCW would have to enlighten us on this. They started with the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
So they did the Hall of Fame inductions, which was very nice, but people were, you know, some people were coming in during that. And so basically there was no distinction, to answer your question, of knowing or anything that was identified as a pre-show. It just went to matches, and you basically had a 6-match first half and intermission, then a 6-match second half, and then 4.5 hours by the time all was said and done.
Right. And I know a couple of things got switched then including the induction. When we had got there, they had said that, and this I think was something that you had mentioned in your report, but Slam and Stitch's match was actually supposed to go after Luke Gallows and Shane Marks.
Yes.
Do you think that would have changed things there?
Yeah, I mean, that might have been a little better, and I certainly think that if they had done the pre-show matches, then the Hall of Fame induction, that would have been better. I understand and you would probably know more about this than I would, is that the reason for the switching of the Shane Marks Gallows match was that Shane was still making his way over from PCW, was the reason that was moved around.
I know we had gotten there during the intermission. So I can definitely understand why those two had been switched. I think it was more that Matt had not gotten there yet. They had half of them because Shane and I left before Matt and Jagged Edge had arrived. So, yeah, those are just the fun little things that happen kind of behind the scenes. And it happens at every show. Someone's late. Someone doesn't show up. You know, and then all of a sudden everything is just kind of turned upside down. And it can really, you know, as we saw at Shindig, it can really affect the flow of the show and the feeling of some of the matches.
Yeah, so I don't know if those are your ferocious dogs we're hearing in the background here.
That is my dog. I'm gonna let you talk, Larry, and I'm gonna go on mute for a second and put him outside.
So anyway, I don't know if it's just I don't think it's just me, but I don't understand the doing such long shows. I mean, 4.5 hours at SFCW, the Anarchy show, while it, I want to say it was 3 hours for their anniversary show, but then they had the 40-minute main event with no intermission. So that was a very long night. And I just don't get the need to have such long shows, and I don't think it's for the benefit of the fans. I know some will disagree with that, but I don't think in general that most fans really want to go for that, and I don't know why we're at this stage in wrestling where these shows have tended to get longer. It's sort of like Major League Baseball with the games getting longer and Monday night. And I know Major League Baseball is now trying to do things to shorten it down. And I would just think with the generally shorter attention spans of people that you'd want to be shorter rather than longer. And I think that's part of the problem with WWE is a 3-hour Monday night show you got SmackDown on top of it. It's just too much.
Right, and I think it almost turns into this battle of quantity versus quality, that people think that it's not as big of a deal if it's the same amount of matches on your normal card, that if you put on that extra match or two, then all of a sudden it becomes this grander thing where really you can get away with having as few matches as you normally do, but just having your big angles have payoffs or, you know, really highlighting your main people. But that really gets lost now. And I think Raw is definitely a kind of a culprit with that. I think we even talked about, I don't think either of us have gotten through a full episode of Raw in the recent past.
No, I usually have it on in the background, and then if something catches my interest, I'll be watching more intently, but for most of the time, I'm really not. It just doesn't really move me to sit there for 3 hours and watch Raw. There isn't enough that really grabs me about it to want to do that, which is kind of a sad state of affairs.
Are there any shows that you go to in the area that you would say have a good balance between maintaining your interest, but also kind of in the interest of time, being more conscious of that?
Well, you know, I think they used to be the worst offenders when Mike Jackson was there, Peach State, with their two long intermissions and dragging it out. They've gotten really good about not doing that and getting their shows down to about 2.5 hours.
And they're ones I was thinking of, because you had said at one of their big shows recently, they had only had a small handful of matches, really, but they all had a lot of impact. Am I thinking of the right place?
Yeah, that was their lead-in show to the anniversary show, which is coming up on the 20th. They only had four matches, and the card, I believe, that lead-in show was over in about 2 hours and 15 minutes. And in fairness to Anarchy, often they've been, you know, particularly since they dropped out the intermission, the shows have not been running really long. I mean, the anniversary show, I'd say, was definitely more the exception than the rule at Anarchy as far as a long show.
Something that I end up talking to people a lot about, and since we've kind of touched on it tonight, intermissions are obviously something that happen in a lot of shows. Sometimes one, I think UIW had also done two intermissions back in their heyday a year or so ago. And what you find is a better balance, no intermission, two intermissions, one?
I like one intermission. Of, you know, one 15-minute intermission to give people a chance to freshen up, go to the bathroom, get their smokes in, whatever. and going back to the days at the Omni, that's when you put the tickets on sale for the next show, and people would line up to buy their tickets for the next show at the intermission. But in any case, yeah, that one 15-minute intermission, and that should suffice.
And something I end up kind of arguing for intermissions is it gives people time to get up without feeling like they're missing anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely where people say, like, oh, that was the popcorn match that people could get up. But if that's the only opportunity in a show to get up is the popcorn match, then you're kind of robbing your fans of being able to be fully invested in everything.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I know Empire was the first place I went to where they had dropped intermission. They also tended to keep their show a little shorter than Anarchy, so that I don't know that it was, you know, it didn't feel that long because their show rate was a little shorter. So, and then Anarchy dropped their intermission.
What's their average on Empire? Because I know Anarchy usually runs 2+ hours. Is it shorter than 2 or?
No, not shorter than 2. And I haven't been to enough Empire shows to have an average, but I think they want to aim for that 2 to 2.5 hour range. I don't think they want to go any longer than that and closer to 2 if they can get away with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we've been speaking about Southern Fried, and Peach State is our guest on for today.
He is not here yet, but we're almost at that point where he would be expecting, and we do have, as we... your dog, and now my bird's going to go wild here in the background. Come on.
We missed our co-host, and so now we have all of our animal co-hosts today. That is, I think, the theme for today, because now I have a cat outside of my door. So without Steve, it all just falls apart. No one behaves in any shape or form.
But yes, we do have our scheduled guest tonight is Odinson, who was, you know, one of the highlight his match and teaming with Payne at the SFCW show was one of the highlights of the, certainly one of the highlights of the undercard. And he is our scheduled guest for this evening, and hopefully we'll be hearing from him shortly. On another topic, I don't know if we should get into this now or not. I guess we will, since I don't see him on the line here. It came out recently, a report that regarding the Wednesday night situation with Ring of Honor debuting in, albeit not first-run programming, but Ring of Honor preceding TNA, that Destination America set up a meeting to talk about potential synergies with Ring of Honor and TNA, which seems kind of problematic to me. do you want to groom your the folks that are going to take your spot, or try to help out the folks that are taking your spot? Very interesting. But maybe we should come back to that later, because I do see we have our guest on the line.
All right. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to that. You want to give him a proper introduction, Larry?
Yes, we are joined now by a rising star on the Georgia scene who's making his name in a number of promotions, NWA Atlanta, Peach State, WWA4, most recently at Southern Fried. We're joined now by Odinson. Welcome to The Tipping Point.
Hi, and thank you. Nice to have me on the show. It's good to be here.
We don't have Steve Platinum with us. He is in Hawaii at some kind of a, is it a reunion, Rachel, that he's at?
His class reunion, yes.
Wow.
I think he'll be having too much fun in the sun to be calling in with questions.
Yes. So you're stuck with the two of us tonight, Odinson, but we're really glad
to have
you. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about how you got into wrestling. Let's start with the basics.
Okay, well, basically how I got into actually wrestling, or just as a fan?
No, the actual into the wrestling business.
Okay, well, almost about 2 years ago now, I got married, me and my wife, we got married, and we decided to move down here from Washington State, because wrestling had always been something I wanted to do, and she pretty much convinced me that it was a possibility. So I contacted WWA4, and then I started training there and, you know, hit the ground running. So here I am.
And how long have you been in Georgia, just for the people who haven't been following you?
Almost 2 years now. Almost 2 years ago, I moved here and then started training immediately.
Now, you said your wife convinced you that this could be possible.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, I was back in Spokane where I grew up, and I was just, you know, lifting weights, powerlifting, working as a bouncer. Never really thought about, you know, actually wrestling, because it's just not something that goes on in Washington. I think there's maybe one promotion on the other side of the state. And then in Idaho, there's nothing. So there's just nothing close. So I never really thought it was an actual possibility, you know. But my wife, she does a lot of traveling. She's lived in other countries. So she was just like, yeah, we can do it. So what do we need to do? And then we did it. So here we are.
So did you come to Atlanta specifically for WWA4?
Yep, exactly. I checked it out online. One of them, I went to high school with a guy back in Spokane, and he actually was training there. And I came across it on Facebook, and I just started talking to Frank. I checked it out, and yeah.
And WWA4 is a place that does have a reputation for their training. It's one of the places that when people do talk about the places to train in Atlanta, that's really the big place that comes up. Have you found that it met the expectations that you had going in?
Yeah. I mean, I really didn't know anything really about the wrestling business. You know, I was just a fan, really. And so, yeah, I mean, I started training there. Mr. Hughes, he's great. He he's really taught me a lot. He's taught me how to work, you know, big man style. And, yeah, I mean, there's four rings that we can train in every day. So, you know, whenever you want to get in the ring, there's pretty much openings. It's not just one ring, everybody taking turns. So, yeah, I mean, it's a great place to train.
You mentioned, you know, being a fan before, of course, getting into the business. Could you talk a little bit about your fan days and who appealed to you as a fan?
Well, growing up, Kane was my favorite. He was just the man. He was just, I loved his look. He just destroyed people. And for a long time, for years and years, pretty much until Brock Lesnar came around, I was a big Kane fan. But then when Lesnar came around, I just was amazed at everything he could do. And he really is what inspired me to actually start lifting weights and stuff. So I'd say Lesnar, just the matches he had with Angle and all those guys back in 2002, 2003, those were my favorite years. So, I mean, I probably stopped watching around 2005, 2006 for a few years. But, yeah, those are definitely my favorite days, 2002, 2003, as a fan.
So going between the two of them and looking back at the people that you really liked and how they've influenced you, do you find that going from really enjoying watching Kane to enjoying watching Lesnar, did that change your opinion on how a wrestler should act, or has it affected your training at all?
Well, yeah, I mean, Lesnar's just, he's that guy, you know, that just has everything that I kind of always looked up to. You know, he's big, he's strong, he's athletic, he can wrestle. Just his presence alone is amazing. So, I mean, yeah, I try to aspire to that. And with Kane, not so much, just because I'm not really that body type. I'm not really that style.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm more, you know, focused on trying to get on Lesnar's level, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I have to ask, what inspired you to pick Odinson as your gimmick?
Well, I've always been a huge fan of Norse mythology and things like that. I'm half Norwegian, so I always kind of grew up with, you know, stories about Vikings and all that. So when I was coming up with, you know, my gimmick, I wanted to go with something along the lines of a Viking, you know, something like that. And then, you know, Thor Odinson, that's you know, his last name basically. And I just,
mm-hmm.
that name always stuck with me, Odinson. Like, it's just something about it, you know, it's catchy. And I thought, you know, that's a great gimmick right there, you know. If I can channel some of Thor's energy, you know, in the ring, then you know, that's what I'm for.
Well, I mean, it looked like you were channeling some of Thor's energy in the ring Saturday night at Southern Fried, the way you were throwing those guys around. I mean, that Leo Gold's not a small guy.
Yeah, that was a great match. I had a lot of fun tag teaming with Payne. And yeah, I mean, that's my thing, you know, throwing big guys around. So, you know, I've had 5 to 360-pound guy before, so he wasn't too big.
Wow. Go ahead.
Two years really can kind of be a short time in wrestling, especially with only working on the weekend sometimes, and then with your training that takes a big chunk of that. Is there anyone that, now that you're traveling around to all the different shows, is there anyone that you've worked with that really taught you something or changed how you looked at certain aspects of wrestling?
Well, I'd say the guy who made me look at wrestling like how I do now would be Jonathan Gresham. I never actually got to work him, but at WWA4, I got to, you know, talk with him a lot and train with him there. And he's the one who really taught me to work like a big man, work the big man style, and just the psychology behind it and the storytelling. he really really helped me find my niche, you know, my style. So I'd have to give a lot of credit to that guy. You know, he's just a machine when it comes to wrestling, just a wealth of knowledge. So, yeah, I'd say Gresham really, he really shaped my style.
That's interesting, such a small guy shaping such a big guy's style.
Yeah, yeah, it is. He really enjoys watching heavyweights, so he really likes helping me and, you know, helping me learn that style. And, you know, he kind of works that style, but he, you know, he is a smaller guy, but he still works that psychology and stuff. So, I mean, he actually turned me on to watching Daisuke Sakamoto, a Japanese wrestler. And that's basically all I watch now is just watch his matches because I just love the storytelling of it.
Tell us a little bit, Odinson, about your athletic background before you got into pro wrestling.
Growing up, I played baseball, football since I was like, I don't know, played baseball since I was like five till through about sophomore year, same with football. I started wrestling in high school my freshman year, and then after sophomore year, I quit wrestling. I started gaining a bunch of weight, getting big, working out. So I switched from wrestling in high school to powerlifting. And I started powerlifting when I was, I think, 17. I did my first bench press competition. I think I benched 350, my first one. And then I competed in powerlifting for like 4 years. And I broke a few records. My highest squat was 800 pounds. My bench was 600, and deadlift was 700. So 2,100 total in powerlifting was my best when I was 20 years old. And then I also competed in the Highland Games, which are basically the Scottish strongman-type competitions where you're basically throwing heavy stuff around. And I competed in that for 3 years, just locally in Washington. And then from there, I came down here to wrestle. So, yeah, it's a strength athlete going into wrestling.
Whoa.
That is quite a list of achievements. I didn't even know that we had Highland Games anywhere in the U.S. I guess it makes sense. Nothing I had ever thought to look into.
Oh, yeah, they're awesome to see.
So are you utilizing that? Are you, like, throwing tables at people in your matches? Or?
Well, I'd say it definitely helps because the camber toss, you're basically throwing a 20-foot telephone pole trying to flip it. So throwing a 200-pound guy is not so hard anymore.
I can imagine.
I guess. Oh, my.
Yeah.
That's really impressive.
Oh,
no wonder. Yeah, no wonder you're throwing guys around with ease.
Yeah, when I was powerlifting, I was over 300 pounds. I was probably about 305 pounds for, I don't know, 3 years. So then switching into wrestling mode, I dropped about 25 pounds when I got down here. And then now I'm slowly working my way back up to 300 pounds. I'll be there one day.
So what's your current weight as you go into the ring?
288.
Mm.
So I'm getting there.
And you're how tall?
About 6'4", 6'3" and a half, almost 6'4".
Did you, by any chance, do anything related to Tough Enough? Did you do a video, or were you interested in that direction?
No, I stayed away from that. I'm not really trying to go that that way.
That way in terms of WWE or televised wrestling?
Yeah, just in terms of WWE. The way I look at it is I'd rather be noticed by my wrestling skills rather than just a group of thousands of people sending in everyday people sending in videos. I'd rather be recognized as a wrestler before I go into a company such as WWE.
Is, you know, most everybody we talk to, WWE would be their eventual goal. Is that yours?
I mean, yeah, that would be the end game, I guess, the top of the mountain. But I definitely want to make stops along the way. I'd love to wrestle in Japan, get some experience over there. Ring of Honor, of course. Lucha Underground's looking awesome right now. I mean, anywhere, really. I'm not just focused on WWE, that's for sure. I got my options open.
It, you know, just like from the get-go, it sort of seemed like Japan would be interested in a guy with your kind of strength and size and so forth would be a kind of a tailor-made fit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to kind of get my style going a little more towards, you know, how they work. So hopefully I can make that happen someday. Because I do think I'd be a good fit over there with that style and everything. And, yeah, I think the fans would really enjoy it, too.
So anywhere of the places that you've mentioned or here in the U.S., who's maybe one or two people that you would really like a match with?
Ooh. Hmm. Well, the guy right off the top of the head, he's not from the U.S., but Daisuke Sekimoto, like, that's a dream of mine to wrestle him someday. And I hope I get to do it before he retires or something. But as far as over here, I mean, man. I mean, I'd say Brian Cage is probably one of the top heavyweights. And I really like his style and his look and everything. And I think that we would have an awesome match. That would be that'd be something I definitely enjoy.
I'd like to see that. Yeah, definitely. You and Brian Cage, that would be interesting.
I'd love that. I think I'd actually be the smaller guy, though, so it might be kind of weird. Yeah, but just watching the stuff he does in Lucha Underground just blows my mind. It's just, wow, that guy's big and athletic, and, you know, that's what I'm trying to be, so I think it'd be fun.
As you've gotten out and about on the Georgia wrestling scene, have you been the smaller guy? And if so, who would that be with? Have you been in that situation?
Yeah, a couple times, a few times actually. I've worked Iceberg at NWA. He's, I think, a 400-pounder. I've worked Tank at Heat State. I think he's a 400-pounder. And WWA 4, there's a guy named Grizz. He's about 360. Pretty solid 360 as well. Probably about 6'6", 6'7". He's a big guy. Me and him have had some great matches there. And a few outside of WWA 4.
And that would be pretty kind of unusual for you at the size that you are and considering the size that most guys in Georgia are. How do you approach those matches differently?
Well, you just, with the smaller guys, I know I'm going to be tossing them around, you know, most of the time. But with the bigger guys, you got to kind of build up to that. You got to kind of break them down more first. And then, because I can lift the 400-pound guys, but maybe not right off the bat while they're still kicking and punching. So, I mean, it's more of a, you take more time to wear them down. It's not as fast paced. but I definitely enjoy working heavyweights.
When did you start branching out of WWA for and start getting around to other promotions in Georgia? How long has that been?
Well, I started working WWA 4 in January of 14, and I think the weekend after that, I started working at Peach State. And then, so, I mean, it was like right when I started doing matches at the school, I started doing matches outside of the school.
Mm.
I think the first one I had outside of the school was against Cody Hall.
Wow.
That was the week, yeah, I think it was the weekend that I debuted at WWA 4. I worked Cody Hall.
I think I saw that because I was doing some research on you since I'm not too familiar, and I think I did see where there was a video of the two of you wrestling.
Me and him have worked, we've worked probably 6 times together.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, we're pretty familiar with each other now in the ring. He used to train at WWA 4 before he went over to Japan, so we work together a lot. So, yeah, we have quite a few matches, I think, on YouTube.
You know, we really haven't talked much about, or hardly at all, about WWA 4 on this show. Could you give us insight into WWA 4 and the top wrestlers that are there now training and so forth? Your slant on WWA 4 as it is.
Okay, yeah, I mean, there's great workers there right now. Like I said, there's Grizz. He's a big heavyweight, about 360, real big guy. He's been working almost as long as I have. I think he started, 3-4 months after me. Rob Chicano, The Solution, he's another heavyweight there. He's a solid 255. Another guy I've worked a few times. I really enjoy working him. I think the champion right now is Owen Knight.
Oh, yeah.
He's Owen Knight. I've worked him a couple times at WWA before. Yeah, he's the champion. He's battling out with Joe Hyken right now for the title. And another one is the AT Alien, D-A-T Alien. He's another good worker from there. I just had a tag match with him a couple weeks ago, actually. We worked together pretty well. The Darkmon, he's another heavyweight that trains there. He was at the Southern Fried Show against Judas. Right?
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, me and Darkmon have had some battles at WWA 4. I mean, if you can check those out, they're probably the toughest fights to this day that I've had. He's the first guy that I really worked an angle with and got to wrestle quite a few times. And we beat each other up pretty good. The Darkmon, he's always a guy to look for there. And
Keep going. I can ask later.
Those are the guys that have been there the longest right now. There's a whole group of probably like 15 guys that are waiting to get on the show right now. They're doing their training and everything. So there's about to be a whole other batch of wrestlers coming out of there.
So in terms of WWA 4, sorry, Larry.
Go ahead.
Would you say that Darkmon's been your favorite angle that you've worked, or is there been another one?
Those are probably the ones that stick out the most. Me and Darkmon. I think we worked like 6-7 weeks in a row one time. So, yeah, those were some battles. We haven't had a match in a long time, but I'm sure there's one coming. But also Grizz and The Solution, the other two heavyweights there. I like working those guys. Those guys got some talent, and we have great matches together. So Those are the other two I really enjoy working there.
And as you branched out, it seems like you've gotten your, from other promotions, your strongest push has been in NWA Atlanta. Would you agree? I mean, you went to the title there.
Yeah, definitely. I was actually surprised that it happened so quickly. I started working, I think, an angle with, was it Iceberg? Yeah. Iceberg at one of their shows, and then, next thing I know, I'm in the ring with Tyson Dean for the title. So I'm just like, yeah, this is awesome. Yeah, so, I mean, I had a pretty good run at Peach State, too, for a while. I was squashing guys there. For a few weeks, I was squashing 2-3 guys at a time, so that was fun, too.
Yeah, I wondered about that. It didn't seem to lead anywhere. It looked like they had big plans for you. I mean, am I wrong about that? Did it go somewhere and I missed it?
Well, I started working an angle with Ultimate Dragon, and I think that lasted a couple weeks. And then I actually got injured. I separated my AC joint, my shoulder. So I was out for about a month and a half, and then when I came back, it was just the story had gone somewhere else, and I just started working again, and
What have you? What are the things you've learned as you've branched out, gone to different places, worked in front of different crowds, different environments? How's that helped you?
It's helped me to realize that you need to, that the crowds are different places. They, some crowds appreciate different styles more than others. So it kind of helps to know, what kind of crowd you're working with. Some crowds like, more old school style, some crowds don't. So, I mean, it just teaches you to, know your crowd, know what they like, know what you need to do in the ring to get over.
Any crowd you prefer to perform in front of?
The Southern Fight crowd was awesome this weekend. They were great. That was a lot of fun. The NWA crowds are always really good. Peach State's always really good. I mean, I enjoy working in front of anybody, really. So it's nice when there's a lot of people there,
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely want to ask more on the injury, but before we get too much further, Larry, we had a sponsor that we needed to hear from. Is that right?
Yeah, we got to pay the bills, I always say. So, let us see who we have on tap for tonight. Oh, yeah. This one is always good.
Are you craving meat? Then maybe it's time you came to the Von Erich Family Steakhouse. I'm Kevin Von Erich, owner and operator of Von Erich Steaks, where we serve only the finest Texas beef, and we've got a steak for everyone's taste. Try our 32-ounce T-bone, the David, the finest, juiciest, most over steak in the place, which was destined to win the Steak World Championship, but never got the chance. Or how about the Curry, the 20-ounce ribeye that's got a lot of sizzle, but not as much of the steak. On a diet, try Kevin, a 12-ounce lean cut of sirloin that comes barefooted. Maybe you're into hamburgers. How about the Heaven Needed a Hamburger, a.k.a. the Mike? Or take the ultimate meat challenge, the Fritz. 42 ounces of tough, mean, grizzled, thick, burned, nasty, mean beef. It's like chewing on an old tire. Or, for the vegetarian option, the Lance, which isn't meat or Von Erich at all. At Von Erich Family Steakhouse, we've got something for everyone. So come on down and see us at the Sportatorium in Dallas, Texas. Von Erichs, our steaks will put a claw hold on your stomach.
There you go.
I love that one.
Making me hungry.
So in terms of your injury, has that changed the way that you've approached matches, or are you just kind of back in the groove of things?
Yeah, I mean, now it irritates me, but it's nothing I can't handle. When it happened, I was doing more military presses to people, and I don't find myself doing them so much anymore, and I think that it's because of my shoulder. But besides that, no, it hasn't really affected me, so pretty much the same.
And that was the first major injury you've gotten through wrestling, or had there been others before?
Yeah, that's the most major. Well, my first match, I got a concussion. Well, I was actually concussed the week before and then got re-concussed my first match.
Oh.
But those are the only serious injuries that I've gotten. I'll tell you, doing your first match concussed is not fun. Not at all.
Oh, I can't imagine it would be. Doing anything concussed isn't very much fun.
No, just the where am I, you know, just waking up in the middle of the ring, just like, what's going on? That wasn't fun.
How did it happen?
I took like an arm DDT, you know, he had my arm, he back bumped, and I had my forehead down like an idiot, and my forehead just bounced off the mat.
Oh.
Yeah, it's on video, it's not too pretty. But the way I originally got concussed the week before, I got knocked off the apron, and my feet, like, stayed on the apron as my body fell off, and I just hit the ground head first.
Oh.
That one was not fun. But, yeah, nothing too serious, so got to thank Odin for that.
Yeah, because an AC joint, that can be that can be fairly serious as far as keeping you out for a while, can't it?
Yeah, there's, I think, 3 degrees of separation. I had a second-degree separation. It was separated probably almost a half inch. But, yeah, now it's just sitting there where it got separated. It still feels like it's out of place, but it doesn't hurt or anything now. Yeah, I was lucky it wasn't more serious.
Definitely. That's always something that they try and tell you not to think too much about or it'll happen, but then when it does happen, then it seems to kind of be on the forefront of your mind.
Yeah, and I actually got it giving someone a move, too. So it was just one of those freak things that happened. I gave someone a back elbow, and they just hit me just right in the shoulder, and it popped it forward. So I wasn't even taking a move when it happened.
Larry, do you have a question? Because I have to, like, recover from that myself.
Oh. I have one. I'm just curious. You know, you haven't been in the ring that long. Do you mostly rely on calling matches in the back? I mean, a lot of things worked out or more in the ring, or how do you feel about that aspect of wrestling?
I always like having a plan. I always think the storytelling's a lot better when you go into it knowing what story you're going to tell.
Mm-hmm.
So I like having stuff planned out. I like having stuff, not necessarily, not every single thing, but, you know, just general ideas, you know. I think matches move a lot smoother. They tell better stories when there's some thought put into it rather than, oh, let's just go out there and just listen to me. Just, you know, it's like, I'm sure you're experienced and you know how to tell a story, but I would like some input on it too, you know.
Have you had that happen a lot?
No, most of the time people want to work with me. They want to, you know, tell the story I want to tell for the most part. So you know, there hasn't been a lot of times where it's just like, oh, let's just go duke it out, you know. I like having a general idea, and I think they know that I want to have a story, so they roll with it. I mean, it's worked out pretty well so far.
Have you been in the situation where you really had to audibleize because what you had in mind just was not clicking, was not working out?
Not really. I haven't really had to, like, change anything completely. I mean, maybe draw out some things a little longer or cut it short. But for the most part, everything seems to click pretty well in the ring. So there hasn't been any situations where it's just been like, ah, screw it, we're doing this. So, no, it's everything usually rolls pretty smoothly.
Outside of WWA 4, where would you say you've had your best, what would you consider to be your best match or matches?
Oh, man. Well, down at SPW, I've had a few good matches. But, again, those are WWA 4 guys I was working. Oh, man, I guess I just like working those guys a lot.
Okay.
I mean, for the most part, when I'm outside of WWA 4, I'm just tossing guys around, stomping over guys pretty easy, so there isn't much, thought or storytelling to it, just besides I'm going to crush you. So, I mean, the best stories I've told have definitely been in WWA 4. They definitely stick out the most, but, I mean, just as far as moments go, winning the title from Tyson Dean, that was pretty cool. It wasn't an actual match, but I got to spear him and give him an F10, so that was pretty fun.
So are WWA 4 and NWA Atlanta the places that you're at most consistently, or is there anywhere else?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be working Southern Fried pretty consistently from now on. I've been working at SPW pretty consistent. I was the all-out champion there for a little bit. But, yeah, I'm at WWE 4 every week doing matches because I train there 4 or 5 days a week. So I'm there all the time, so I'm always wrestling there. But, yeah, NWA Atlanta and I think SPW and Southern Fried are where I'm consistently working right now.
And where will we be seeing you soon besides WWA 4? What else is on your schedule besides your weekly WWA 4?
The only things I have booked right now are just NWA Atlanta and Southern Fried. Those are the only shows I got lined up. I haven't really expanded outside of Georgia too much. Not that I don't want to. I'm just taking it slow, trying to hone my craft before I expose myself to everybody.
Will we be seeing more of you and Payne as a tag team in Southern Fried?
It's definitely a possibility. Everyone really enjoyed us working together, and we really enjoyed working together. So, yeah, it would be great if we could tag some more. I don't know anybody that could really stand a chance against us two in the ring, so I definitely hope that we get to work together more. That'd be great.
Cool.
Well, we are closing in on the end here, and we've certainly enjoyed chatting with you today. We do have one final segment that if you would like to stay around for, we would love to have your input on it, especially since we're missing a voice today.
Okay, yeah. Sounds good.
Sorry, you want to start that up?
Yes. Here we go.
It's time to play Is He
Talked about a fucking pound of weed and played a bunch of video games. Weed is tight. Weed is tight.
Brady
Boone
awesome.
Scott
Dorn.
How you doing, that was a hell of a finish. Yeah. Coco Samoa. It's one of the fastest, energetic men I've ever seen in the ring today. The belts are on the line. What can I say? He's got one fall under, going for him. We may see the belts change hands here tonight. I really feel that. Me and my new partner here, what we've got going, we feel is one of the best combinations of tag teams I've ever been involved with. I feel this. My partner here, he's one of the fastest men, one of the most agile, energetic individuals I've ever been teamed with. Now, me and Brady are going to be going after the belts in Pendleton, Washington. We got the title on the line. The belts are on the line all week. We got Pendleton. We got Yakima. We're going after the Clan. We're going after Buddha Dean. We're going after Mike Miller. We almost had him here tonight. The Clan, the Clan jumped in there. They just blindsided us right from behind. It's not going to happen. By the time the week's over, we plan to have those belts right around our waist. Tell him, Brady.
That's right, Skid. Same goes for here. I couldn't have a better man on my quarter. He's big. He's powerful. That's exactly what someone like me needs to compliment myself. Let me tell you, there's a few things I don't understand. And one of them's, well, Rip Oliver can bring someone in like Buddha Dean, a flag-waving commie foreigner, and have the belt. It doesn't make sense to me. Mike Miller, you're no better. You're supporting. The only thing American about you is your name. And they make beer. Let me tell you, Miller, Buddha Dean, Rip Oliver, we've been beating the pants off you all over the Pacific Northwest. Everywhere we go, we've been putting your shoulders down, 1, 2, 3. And when you do happen to maybe come out on a fall, it's from cheating. Well, let me tell you, whether it be Pendleton, Yakima, White Swan, Medford, Salem, right back in Eugene, and right here Saturday, we're going to get you.
All right. Thanks very much, gentlemen.
Like I said, Don, by the end of the week, me and this man here are going to have those belts. Whatever the other one is, we're going to have them.
Okay. Brady Boone, Scott Doring, we're going back out to the ring now for our second fall of our main event. First fall taken by Coco Samoa over Rip the Crippler Oliver. If you have a club, a church, a group, a school, an organization of some kind that you want to raise money for, you can book professional wrestling into your area.
Larry, I forgot to ask. Will you tell us who was in that promo?
Yes, that was from the Pacific Northwest. Portland Wrestling. That was Scott Doring and the one and only Brady Boone.
So the way this is played is we're going to ask a very simple question. Larry will be the good example of how this game is played. Larry, are they high?
No, I don't think so. I think this is a lot like last week. I don't think Doring or Brady Boone were high. I just think they're not. They're just really dull promo guys.
Robinson, were they high?
You know, I'm going to have to agree. I don't think they were. I think they had an idea of what they wanted to say, an outline, but they just kept going and couldn't bring it back around. I don't think they were high. No, I don't think so.
A lot of rambling.
Miss Rachel?
You said the first was Doring, is that right?
Yes, were they high?
He was high. And then there was a little bit of a contact high going on there. That man could not finish a sentence without stopping partway through and then starting over. Either he is the worst promo cutter in the history of the world, or he was high. And I'm going to go with he's high because why not?
See, I think it would have been a better promo if they were high. I think that was part of the problem. But you know, we do have now. It looks like Stephen Platinum is going to weigh in on this. He has just joined us.
Perfect.
I have literally just touched down in Honolulu. People are getting their bags and deboarding this flight, but I have to chime in on this segment. Those guys, this is from the Pacific Northwest, right, Larry?
Yes, yes.
Those guys are high. They're from the Pacific Northwest. I've lived there. They're high.
Yeah.
I don't even care what they sounded like. It doesn't matter what they said. If you have to live in Oregon or Washington State, you're high.
That's true.
Steve, I don't know if you knew, but our guest is from the Pacific Northwest originally.
Oh yeah, Washington
See,
State.
He'll back me up. He'll back me up.
No, yeah, I agree. Yep, 100%. Yeah, weed's legal there now, recreationally. So, yeah.
And in honor,
they're pretty chill about it up there.
And in honor of me,
rehash that promo and see if Larry's correct. If it would be better then.
Well, sorry I called in so late, guys, but I'm here in Hawaii, and I might even be able to work an indie show while I'm here, I was told. Nice. So I'll see if I can snag somebody from the Hawaii Fed to be on the show next week.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you to Odin Sun. Look at me just chiming in here. And for Larry Goodman, Miss Rachel, I'm Stephen Platinum, and we'll see you next week on The Tipping Point.
Thanks.
That's all, folks.
I did not know we had that.
I thought I'd throw that in.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast.
That was fantastic.
Production brought to you by the GWS Radio Network.
I've always loved that clip.
Stay tuned to GeorgiaWrestlingIndustry.com for the latest information on upcoming events and more. As always, we thank you for your continued support.
Is he better late than never in dipping out early at the same time?
He's gone. That was a quickie.
Well, that was,
thanks.
That was a good night.
Yeah.
Larry, as always, I enjoy our time together.
Yes, that was fun. See you next week.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate
Thank you.
Thanks for being on.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, you guys have a good one. Take it easy.